The Spinoff Podcast Network. Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today.
The Fold is brought to you by O-Media, making brands unmissable and public spaces better across Aotearoa. Nau mai, hoki mai ki a The Fold e mihi nei. Ko Duncan Greer, tōku ingoa. Welcome to The Fold. My guest this week is Dan Awa, who is creative director at Viva Magazine, which is the Herald's fashion, beauty, food and wellbeing publication, in its own words. Viva is super interesting to me. It's a newspaper inserted magazine, or a NIM, in the kind of crude acronyming of the industry. But it's also one that very much feels like a real publication. The kind of cliche, or the worst version of a NIM, is something that is basically just purely exists. So they've got a masthead and a couple of cheap stories so they can sell ads around. You see a lot with cars, you see it a lot with property, is like the classic example. You know, you might have three stories and, you know, 100 pages of ads on a good day. Viva is just not like that. It is it's a really crafted and curated publication. It's had a very long-running and consistent set of staff. And the thing that that distinguishes it for me, and that we talk about quite a bit on this episode, is the fact that it feels. I mean, they used to joke, as Dan says, about Viva Island, and it feels like an island. You know, like the rest of NZME, which owns the Herald, and Viva is inserted into Wednesday's Herald. You know, it has its own kind of value set, its own aesthetics. Viva's are just totally different. Viva has its own website, its own social channels. They're all run out of the Viva team. They don't suffer from that flattening, which you often get at publications that are sort of part of a bigger ship. Even at somewhere like Bow, which was, you know, a publisher of a lot of individual titles, there was some kind of there was just a lot of things that felt common to them all. There was a kind of an aesthetic or a paper stock that was always the same. I mean, that's in part because, you know, Viva's been going for 23 years. And, you know, this time last year, and we get into this, it got down to four pages. As Dan says, it didn't even need a staple to be bound. And, you know, NZME had just killed off Radio Sport. There was a sense that everything was on the table and that this publication might not make it through. Instead, they did what seems like a quite crazy thing at the time, probably should have been more noteworthy, that they launched a glossy quarterly publication. And as of now, it feels like it's in as good health as it's ever been. So I talked to Dan a lot about that, about, you know, holding space for, you know, what is often derisively termed lifestyle content within what is predominantly a news organization, about what has come out of the collapse of Bow, which took down a lot of the sort of lifestyle and women's magazine segment, and about being a Samoan New Zealander within fashion and within kind of mainstream media more broadly, where there aren't a lot of people who necessarily look like you, and he has some interesting things to say there. It's a really interesting chat, I think. Just before we get into it, I have to acknowledge that The Fold is brought to you by Vodafone. The spin-off, which, like I say, now conceives of itself as a company with which technology is a huge part of what we do and what we will do going forward. We need world-class network technology, and we get it from Vodafone. So if you are procuring a network for your business, please check out vodafone.co.nz. This is Dan Awa, creative director of Viva, on The Fold. Kia ora, Dan, and welcome to The Fold.
Kia ora, Duncan. Thanks for having me.
I wanted to start by talking about the kind of catch-all for the segment of media that Viva sits in, which is known as lifestyle. And it feels like that is often used in quite a pejorative way, but that, you know, done well, like anything, it can be a pretty, you know, there's a lot going on there. So I just wondered if, and because Viva sits within NZME, which is predominantly a news-dominated organisation, particularly on the print side, just tell me what attracted you to it and what lifestyle kind of contains underneath that sort of bland word.
Yeah, what attracted me to lifestyle media was sort of a happy accident. I was studying arts and history, art history at Auckland Uni, and I kind of wanted to get into curating and gallery work. And then I started doing part-time work for Pulp magazine back in the day, which kind of suited my schedule. So I guess from then on, I did a bit of freelance work across writing and styling. And styling, I didn't really know was an actual job description, so I kind of felt like it was a really nice mix of art direction and things that I wanted to get into, and then started working in magazines and working my way through there. And I guess that's kind of a really simple starting point for me. But over the years, I've learned to really understand that you can use the idea of lifestyle journalism to sort of talk about the broader aspects of what's happening in our culture today. And I think Viva's done that in a really interesting way. And being based in the newsroom, it's been really interesting to see how we're able to speak to our audience and have that support from the newsroom.
So in terms of what Viva is and how it, I guess the thing that's really interesting to me about it is that it's a newspaper inserted magazine. It comes as part of your Herald on a Wednesday, and those magazines tend to be, this isn't always true, but it's quite frequently true, they tend to come out of a commercial opportunity, a scene by someone in the newsroom, and then they develop an editorial wraparound for the commercial opportunity. Is that fair?
I think that's a really fair assessment, especially what's happening right now. But the main thing with us is that Viva, the reason why it's successful is because it had editorial integrity from the start. And I think commercially, advertisers want to be part of that environment because we've built that trust over the years. So everything that we do doesn't come across disingenuous, whereas if you're maybe starting something now and trying to do all these different things about sustainability or inclusivity, then you've really got to sort of start from scratch. So I think for us, we've been able to develop that relationship with our audience since Viva launched, I think, over 2 decades ago now.
Yeah, 98. And you know, I was sort of thinking about what the magazine world in New Zealand was like back then. And, you know, it was 5 years after the launch of Pavement, which was a phenomenally successful magazine in a similar space. There was, you know, Pulp existed, you know, it was essentially pre-internet for all intents and purposes. And the Herald was a 6-day-a-week broadsheet, very much not a publication to whatever extent that you would associate it now. It certainly wouldn't have been one that you'd associate with style or fashion back in the day. But somehow it has managed to incubate in this publication, which has got a lot of integrity and has in fact outlasted effectively the whole category, and as a result has kind of developed a really important relationship with fashion. And you could feel that in the sort of testimonials that came from the fashion industry in particular at that 20th anniversary. How has it avoided the trap of a lot of those other newspaper insert magazines of that sort of cynicism of its conception infecting the editorial product?
I think it's just having a lot of respect for your readers. They're not, I think the Viva readers are really specific type of audience who already know what they like. And it is quite a broad range. Obviously, there is a female skew, but there's probably about 30-35% male readership now, which is quite high for us. So you've really got to think about, just respecting the reader and what they like and their taste. A lot of our mature readers are young at heart. So it's kind of having that mentality and putting something out there that is not doing them a disservice. And actually going back to the designers from the 20th and some of the things that they said, if somebody sees something in Viva, they'll interact with it straight away, especially when it's the print product on a Wednesday. But, I mean, it's kind of an amazing brand because there are so many opportunities for editorial and commercial. It's a weekly print product. It's got a really highly engaged standalone website, which is quite unique for a Herald brand, NZME brand. I know that the radio stations have their standalone websites, but for us as a print product, it is quite unique. And the social media aspect of it, obviously, with lifestyle journalism, it is something that we focus on editorially. We have in the past outsourced a lot of that stuff, but it's never worked out. So the editorial team actually look after a lot of the social media and the website. And now with the quarterly magazine, it just sort of brings in a whole nother dynamic to the brand.
I mean, and that's the thing that kind of distinguishes it, right, is there are so many layers to it, from events, from the kind of top of the tree being that glossy print quarterly to the immediacy of like a social channel. It feels like a really rounded publication. How does, you know, yet the, you know, how big is the team that creates it, and is, you know, like I think you talked about the there was some kind of mad contradiction of launching a quarterly print publication at the same time as there being redundancies within the team at a time of massive uncertainty within the media overall. This is around a year ago. Are you okay? You know, like how does all that work?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you've got a really strong team environment and everybody's working towards supporting each other. So there's not one person on our team at the moment that is letting things down, which is great. But yeah, I mean, last year everybody sort of dealt with that situation in different ways. When we launched the first volume of the quarterly gloss in September, we didn't know that we'd be doing another one. We just thought this is a one-off. It's a dream that Amanda Linnell, our editor, had for a very long time. It was the right place and the wrong time to do it. But we just sort of threw caution to the wind. But I think media last year was just sort of thinking about throwing the rule book out the window and doing things a little bit differently, or being a bit more radical and seeing an opportunity. Obviously, with what happened at Bauer, it opened up a lot more opportunity for us to be able to do something like that, especially commercially. And it exceeded expectations. It did really well sales-wise, and management signed off on it being an actual quarterly. And we're in pre-production now for our fifth glossy a year later. So it's quite an interesting journey the last 12 months for sure.
Do you feel more connected to that sort of magazine sector, you know, in terms of what Viva is than, you know, newspapers, which I guess you sit potentially uneasily at the seams between those two cultures?
Yeah, I mean, you know what it's like. It's a really small town, so everybody sort of makes their way around different media companies. Everyone at Viva has worked in magazines when it used to be ACP and also Bauer, so we do understand the structure of magazines commercially and editorially. So we use that to our advantage on both the quarterly and the weekly. So there's a really strong understanding there. I don't have a preference for either or. I do love newspapers. I do love I mean, when I first started at the Herald, I was managing the style pages for Canvas. So I sort of do a little bit of that still. But I like the immediacy of it. I like the immediacy of a weekly and speaking to an audience that is a bit more engaged and maybe interested in things other than just fashion or food or culture, which are all really important things to what we cover.
When in that immediate aftermath where through the pandemic, you know, radio sports shut down, there were redundancies at all the major media companies. I think Viva got down to, it got very thin.
Yeah, I mean, for the longest time, we would never go down to less than 20 pages. So it was quite confronting when we saw this time last year that Viva was 4 pages inside the Herald, no staple in the spine.
You don't see one, right?
It was like, I remember sending Amanda a picture and just freaking out and, you know, seeing it that way, it was confronting. You know, you work so hard to really build a really strong product and a strong magazine and a strong relationship with your readers. And that felt like, you know, we've really got to do something radical here. So, you know, 2 months later, we launched the Gloss and it built a really great business case for us to actually support the weekly and maybe hire a few people back that were lost in that first round of redundancies.
Yeah, it's kind of stunning to think of, you know, that transition from getting stretched so thin that, you know, measuring it in microns to then, you know, you'd have to look at the suite of things that Viva does now a year on, and it's probably more substantial than it's been at any point in its 22-year history.
Totally, and then you're trying to save this publication, working from home. You know, we lost our digital editor, so I was managing the website across, you know, working from home. So looking back at that time now, you know, you kind of have to laugh, but it was quite an interesting moment for Viva. And looking at where it is now and the potential for it, it's exciting.
I mean, Viva is, you know, it's about food and fashion and style and beauty and so on. It's not a political publication, but that same period saw the Black Lives Matter protests, which were, you know, impacted every community. And Viva, you know, obviously Tuila Fuatai wrote a stunning piece last year during that time about, you know, reaching out to the New Zealand Black Lives Matter movement and then basically saying we wouldn't speak to the Herald. And that being quite a confronting thing for her as a journalist. Viva itself has felt like it's had a different, you know, it's been a lot more kind of progressive and inclusive. And you just have to scroll through those covers to see the vision of New Zealand and of beauty and fashion that comes across there. And you are a Samoan New Zealander, how does that kind of perception of a sort of a mainstream media that can be, you know, quite starkly white, quite a starkly Pākehā perspective, but you work for a publication within that feels like it's animated by a different value set. How do you sort of navigate all that?
To be honest, I don't really sit down and think about it. there's no strategy around it. For example, with Instagram, I manage a lot of the Instagram content, and you can be a little bit more freer with what you're putting out there. And that kind of helps us navigate things because that, you know, a lot of that Instagram audience aren't actually probably reading or picking up the weekly print magazine. So you're speaking to an audience that are potentially a little bit younger and a lot more engaged with social situations that are happening around the world. So we definitely have discussions about it as a team every week, and we think about how we would cover these topics. Again, we look at and see at what the newsroom are doing, but then we aren't really dictated. we just feel what's right is right, you know. So when Black Lives Matter happened, a couple of contributors would send photo essays of protests that were happening in New York or in London, and you sort of deliver that information in that way, and it's never overly thought out. You know, we don't overanalyze it. We just cover it the way we feel like our audience would appreciate it. I know a lot of designers and brands in particular were being called out for not being inclusive and not having something to say. And, you know, not everyone has to have an opinion on it, but when you are a brand that is discussing diversity and you're not actually addressing what's happening, or the people in the team aren't diverse, then you do have to sort of be held accountable for that. And I think Viva's very good at opening up that dialogue and that conversation. We never choose sides. We just are presenting the information the best way that we can to our audience. And yeah, that's pretty much it. And as a Pacific Islander, I am sort of more sympathetic about a lot of the things that our communities go through. And I look at my family and my cousins and my sisters. You know, I've got people that want to see themselves represented in the magazine. So, you know, I think about them when I'm putting a shoot together. It's not easy. And I think anyone that's trying to emulate or do what we do will find a really hard time doing it, because a lot of it comes from a very genuine place and, you know, lived experiences.
Have you found, when you've been involved in fashion now for, you know, 15 years or more, or, you know, do you feel like it's gotten better at, you know, in terms of being a place for where people of different cultures, backgrounds and so on can feel represented or feel like there's a place for them? It did have a reputation for being a pretty
yeah.
tough
environment.
I mean,
environment. When I first started out, it was very much a specific type of look and size and, you know, definitely white. And now over the years, I think it's great to see that there is progress being made. And I think the success of Viva is being to be able to be there before it becomes a big thing. So I remember a cover story we did in 2006 talking about sustainability and sustainable fashion. And that's in 2006. So, you know, you think about those conversations that are happening now. You know, there has been a little bit of progress made, in terms of diversity in the fashion industry. It's still got a long way to go. But I think, yeah, I mean, it's got to be just beyond that. It's got to be about the people behind the scenes as well. And I think, yeah, it's getting a little bit better, hopefully.
We'll just take a quick break now and come back with more from Dan Auer.
The Fold is brought to you by oMedia, making brands unmissable and public spaces better across Aotearoa, with over 4,000 out-of-home advertising sites nationwide across both street furniture and retail centres. I'm super grateful to oMedia for enabling us to make unmissable connections with Kiwis.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has the lowdown on everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. Join some of the superstars of the investment and business world as they share advice from their time in the US so you can make your mahi count in this massive market. The Investment Fix podcast, brought to you by Invest New Zealand. Tune in today.
So you mentioned before the mentoring role you're playing with some photographers. Yeah, how important is that to you, and sort of what does that entail?
Yeah, so it's really great working with young photographers, because especially with Viva, being able to commission them shoots, it gives them an opportunity to have their work seen by people that might not know their work already. And working with someone like Koho, for example, as a photographer, he comes from the art space, but he's very much interested in other aspects of photography like media. So taking them in and giving them an opportunity to explore their work through a mainstream publication is really exciting because it tests them and challenges them. You know, I look at the Herald photographers and we would sit next to them for a number of years and, you know, I have a lot of respect for what they do because it's a different form of journalism. And we live in a really visual world right now, so being able to bring a lot of new photographers into the fold is really important.
Yeah, as you said, we live in a really visual world now. How has Viva been changed, or how has the sort of the worlds that you inhabit, how have they been changed by the rise of social and Instagram in particular?
Yeah, it's changed a lot. I mean, when everything that we do, we sort of think about where it would sit, whether it's online or the weekly or the quarterly. The quarterly is great because it's sort of Viva in its most purest form as can be. There's more space to sort of cover features and have really good writing in there. But with social media and the immediacy of it, it has sort of changed the way that we interact with our audiences. And I think that's really, I mean, we're looking at the moment at things like TikTok, for example, which is sort of, it's interesting to see how newsrooms are on TikTok and how they're interacting with that audience. So, yeah, I think being able to have the brand in different platforms is a really interesting thing to do.
How do you navigate the different roles that a publication in your sphere has to play, where on some level you might be a partner of a brand at an event,
right.
A critic of them when they have a new season, you know, and a collaborator on a shoot, for example, and you kind of have to be all those things without letting them kind of infect one another?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. I think because we have so many different pillars that we cover, food, fashion, beauty, culture, travel, every now and then, they are quite clearly defined and they are strong in their own right. I look at someone like Jesse Mulligan, who's our dining out editor. When his top 50 restaurant came out with Albert Cho, it was very polarizing. And for us, it was exciting because everybody eats food and everybody enjoys going out. So you do have to respect, you know, a traditional restaurant critic's point of view and the things that they know about the chefs and what they do in the kitchen. And then you've got Albert's perspective, which is very kind of, you know, flamboyant and just kind of, he really loves food and it comes from a very genuine place. So that's a really interesting tension for us that we looked at this year. And when we're working with partners and commercial sponsorships, we always push back. I think it's always good to question things that are being pitched at you and make people think about who they're pitching to. I think we're in a state now where we deal with a lot of people and PR companies, and some of them actually haven't looked at Viva. And so sometimes they'll pitch us something that's completely irrelevant. So it's just about reminding people and educating people that these are our policies. This is where we stand. And we stick by it a lot. We push back a lot. But I think in the long run, that's, you know, a measure of a really successful brand and publication.
Because Viva is so broad, the fact, you know, that it ultimately kind of intersects with a number of different things that the newspaper does, whether that's music or culture or travel. You know, how do you sort of navigate that line with the rest of the publication? Like, are you an island, or are there sort of bridges to the rest of it? Because it can feel, more so than almost anything else in the NZME stable, like it's its own thing. Like, you could almost break Viva out of NZME and make it an independent or transfer it to another entity without, you know, messing with its function in a way that, you know, you couldn't imagine doing with like the business section or even with, you know, something like a Driven. You know, how do you sort of relate to the rest of the newsroom, particularly as you've started to collaborate more with some of those senior writers?
Yeah, I think for the longest time we used to get made fun of in the newsroom, and people used to say it's the island of Viva. So we're not actually physically in the newsroom. Magazines are sort of situated in their own little oasis next to IT, which I think is the best place in the building to be, actually. But yeah, I think since the brand has grown in the last couple of years, we've had a lot of great support. Mariana, who I know you've spoken to before, she's someone that we work with quite closely, and she sort of is a great connector for us in the newsroom. But the magazine teams are really great because we sort of work together. If there's something that we might cross over content-wise, then we sort of discuss it together as a magazine team, whether it's with Travel or Canvas. And then from there, there's a couple of journalists that we have great relationships with. It's just about kind of connecting with people in there because they work bloody hard, you know, especially last year. It was really tough for the newsroom. So being able to kind of have really good relationships with them, you know, people like Kim Knight, who's written a few things for our quarterly magazine, for example, she was actually quite amazing in her support when we were down to four pages last year. Greg Bruce from Canvas has written a few things for us. So we, as writers, sort of have been working a lot closer together this year. And since the introduction of the quarterly, the newsroom and the wider company have been really supportive of the magazine. Now that we're speaking to an audience outside of the North Island, we've got regional radio, for example, doing interviews with the team and actually supporting this and seeing that it is quite a valuable product that is something to be excited about.
In terms of the space that you operate in, you know, obviously the lifestyle and kind of women's titles, which Viva isn't quite, but is sort of adjacent to, was massively impacted when Bauer collapsed. Like last year, your wife Zoe was working there at the time and has since gone on to found Ensemble, which has been one of the most, I think, really interesting new titles to open in the space. Do you think that what is your assessment of the broader area? Like, do you think it has been diminished by that sort of loss, or that the kind of the mass of independence that has seemed to have sprung up subsequently has breathed life into it?
Yeah, I mean, like I mentioned earlier, it's given everybody an opportunity to rethink about what they're putting out there. I know that there's, you know, Ensemble's a really great example. Like you guys at the spin-off, we do a little bit of content sharing with the website, and you know, supporting independent media is really important for us. Yeah, so now, you know, a lot of magazines that had gone under last year are slowly coming back under new ownership, which is great. I mean, it's great to have magazines back in the market. There's new magazines starting up, but I think we're at a point now with magazines where it's become a little saturated, and maybe we really need to think about what the purposes of publishing a magazine is and what the point is, really. You know, I think that's something every editor and magazine team have to think about now.
I think talking about what the purpose of a magazine is, the role it plays in people's lives, and, you know, how they've adapted to the digital era, well, that's a really kind of interesting situation for me. Like, I conceive of the spin-off as a magazine, and we have to sort of fight for that because there's something about the immediacy of digital publishing that can kind of naturally pull you towards shorter, faster, even if you don't, you know, even if you're trying to kind of lean away from that. You know, like, I think, you know, in some ways, like, I kind of wish we had a print publication, because I think there's something about the way it trains your mind and makes you think with a different time horizon. And I think Viva, the way it's structured with those publications, does that help, like, kind of in terms of the holistic sense of what the brand is, to have those, you know, to naturally kind of slot into one of those boxes?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the point of the Quarterly as well. It's become a bit of a collectible. People still like holding a magazine. I know that's sort of cliche thing to keep going on about, but like, people do appreciate print. And again, having that complemented by a really good website offering, it's just about recalibrating your eyes. It's sort of like there's only so much that you can look at on a screen. So having those two print and digital offerings is really quite amazing for us to be able to do and do well.
Well, it's just a beautiful thing to see the magazine go from that sort of just surviving four-pager to this kind of, you know, seemingly, you know, as big as it's ever been a year on. So congratulations for that. Thanks so much for coming up, Dan.
Thanks for having me, Duncan.
That was Dan Auer on The Fold. Thank you to Vodafone for making that happen. Thank you to Ahe for recording me. Thank you to Jane for running the Spinoff Podcast Network, and to the Spinoff members for making the Spinoff happen every day.
That was The Fold, brought to you by our partners at oMedia, making brands unmissable and public spaces better across Aotearoa. Huge thanks to oMedia for sponsoring this episode of The Fold and enabling us to make unmissable connections with Kiwis.
Kia ora e te iwi, Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spinoff. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate. The Spinoff Podcast Network.